Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with Rhodes, and it is a delightful chat. We talk about some incredible records. We find out what he grew up listening to, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't what most other kids were listening to at that point. But it's fantastic. It's a real lovely natter, this one. And before we get on with it, a few thank yous. I'd like to thank the team at the Blue Murder Club podcast who produced this episode. So go check that podcast out. It's called Blue Murder Club, and it's a true crime podcast, and it's wonderful. So go check them out because they produce this podcast for us. Also, big love to my homie Scroobius Pip and everyone at the Distraction Pieces Network. And if it's your first time listening to Off the Beat and Track podcast, then welcome. It's lovely to have you here. We're over 500 episodes in, so you've got loads of catching up to do. And all I can say is go have a look in that back catalogue, because you can hear conversations with the likes of Blur, Suede, The Killers, The Foo Fighters, Motley Crue. It's a huge back catalogue, so go and explore that after you've listened to this wonderful chat with Rhodes. Everything else you need to know about this podcast, there's a Patreon that accompanies it, so any support over there would be hugely appreciated. And yeah, and you can find out about that and everything else at the website, which is nice and simple, Off the Beat and, it's not beaten, Off the Beat and Track podcast.com. I think I'm done with all the kind of pre-chat. So let's get on to the good stuff. Please enjoy today's episode of Off the Beat and Track podcast with the delightful Rhodes.
It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Rhodes, how are you today?
I'm really good. Yeah, I'm great. It's very much feeling like a Monday morning.
Lovely.
Lots of chaos.
Lovely.
Lots of technical difficulties. But well, we got there.
Oh, we're going to have some calm now, and we're going to have some nice chat about music. And we'll kick that chat off, Rhodes, if you can tell me, please, what you regard as the song that has the greatest ever intro, please.
So this was a difficult one. But the one that came to mind, and one of my favourite songs ever written, is Chris Isaak, Wicked Game. And the song is just so iconic. It's hypnotising and haunting, and you're just in the song straight away. I just think, you know, whenever this song comes on, you're just kind of immediately drawn into the moment of the song. And the intro is also really long. Like, you kind of expect it to end halfway through the intro, but it doesn't. It just keeps going, and it just kind of weaves through the chord progression, which kind of stays for the whole song. It's just like three chords the whole way through, I think. And that guitar just carries you in hypnosis through the whole song. But I mean, that's my pick. That's my pick for the best intro ever.
it's a really gentle and beautiful start to a ridiculously beautiful record. It's just that little kind of, that I guess, Chris Isaak was very much kind of influenced by sort of like that kind of sort of late 50s, 60s rock and roll.
And I mean,
I don't know, you're probably way too young to remember this, but because that was written for a film.
Was it written for a film? Okay, I didn't realise. I knew it was in a film, and that's the one it got its big kind of moment.
Maybe it wasn't written for that, but I know that on the cover of the 7-inch of it, it is the artwork from the David Lynch film Wild at Heart. And it definitely, if it wasn't written for that, it got global exposure because of that, you know. And
it's like it's funny with moments like that, because it's almost like they were meant to be, you know. If it wasn't written for the song, like you just said, if it wasn't written for the film, it kind of, the universe allowed for that to happen and just kind of made sure that song existed for the film.
Absolutely.
I was reading an interview with the guitar player of Chris Isaak's band, who kind of came up with the lead sort of the slide guitar thing. And it was just super interesting, because he was kind of talking about how a lot of the songs would have these very simple chord progressions. And then the vocal melody would sort of like evolve throughout the song. And he would sort of try and pick out parts of the vocal melody and, you know, try and basically weave these guitar lines into a lot of the songs that did exactly, I mean, this is the best example of it. But it just, being a guitarist myself and growing up trying to learn how to write guitar parts, it's genius. It's really genius. I think the guitarist's name is James Wilty. Genius.
Absolutely. You mentioned that it's a long intro, and I'm interested to get your kind of take on this. Back then when, Chris Isaak would have released that record, the way that people would consume their music was far different to how they do now. And you could be more generous with the intros and such. This is pre-Spotify and pre-TikTok and all of these things that have kind of become more accessible means for people to access music now. But it seems very fast-paced and very... There's no fat on anything. And I'm not suggesting that there's fat on the intro to Wicked Game. It's as close to perfect as it gets. But where I'm going with this is, when you make music, how much of these kind of trends and ways that people are accessing music now, in these rapid attention spans now, how much of that filters through into your creative process?
That's a good question, and something I think about quite a lot, because I think you can't really help it sometimes. It's at the back of your mind when you're writing, and it shouldn't be, but it's just a subconscious kind of new layer of the creative kind of journey when you're in the session or when you're in the studio making a piece of music. I just finished an album, and the mastering engineer kind of rang us and was like, oh, is that, there's a little bit of chat on the beginning of one of the songs. It's like a part of the iPhone demo recording we did of the very first kind of thing. We thought it'd be fun to put it at the beginning of the song. And the mastering engineer contacted us and was like, oh, I think you've accidentally left a bit of chat on the front of the song. Do you want me to remove that? That's meant to be there. That's intentional. But everybody is now considering that. And I think, you know, middle eights are my favorite thing in writing a song. I love writing middle eights.
Quick question. Yeah. What's the greatest middle eight?
Oh, my God. You're really putting me on the spot there. let's circle back around to that. I need to think about that one. That is a really good question, though. But I think, like, with middle eights, often you think you've written a chorus and then you're like, nah, it's a middle eight. And you have to write another chorus. But people are not putting them in songs anymore, and they're not putting intros on songs, and they're, you know, not doing a double chorus at the end. I don't know. It's difficult. I don't know how much people really think about that. I think when you're listening to music on social media, or you're flicking through TikTok or something, and that is all immediate, but that's not really a music listening experience, is it? It's like you're just consuming content. But I think when you listen to a piece of music, you still want to go and listen. You still go and seek out your favorite songs and your favorite artists, and you want to listen to it. There was that wicked Michael Kiwanuka song that wasn't on the last record, it was the one before that, Cold Little Heart.
Mm.
And the intro is so long. And there's a beautiful live version on YouTube where they're just weaving around that intro forever. And he gets the slide guitar out, and there's some guy on the Mellotron, and it's like, you know, there's still an appreciation for it, but yeah, there's definitely an element of that kind of little voice in the back of your mind saying, don't bother with an intro, don't bother with a middle eight. So yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah.
But I do try not to let it creep in too much, because that's a dangerous, area to go into, because you start overthinking stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to ask you now to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Sure. So this was funny, because I was trying to think, whenever I'm asked a question, you know, what's your favorite song, or what makes you think of this? I always almost like self-filter and try and make it a cool answer. But really, this is the honest truth, and it was Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You.
Yeah.
And I think it was that thing that, you know, even when I'm thinking about the song now, I'm just feeling really nostalgic, because it was like a back of the car kind of thing. My mum was probably listening to it. My mum and my dad were probably listening to it, and I was in the back of the car, really young. I don't actually know how old I would have been, but I would have been super young. Below 10 for sure. And just like feeling incredibly emotional. Obviously lyrically it's ridiculously emotional. And then there's the film as well. There was definitely a moment where I was kind of up late, and, you know, I've got like a vague memory of being at a kind of party. My parents would go to these parties and all the kids would sleep in the living room or something, and the TV would be on. And I feel like this movie came on, The Bodyguard came on at one point, at one of those things. And it's difficult, because you don't understand why a piece of music is making you feel a certain way when you're little. And I've got a little son, he's 6, Louis, and he listens to music now, and he's really feeling something when he's listening to certain pieces of music. And I remember that. I remember listening to this song for the first time and just feeling really sad, and probably thinking about the girl I had a crush on at school or something. And it's like The Weeknd, and The Weeknd is so long when you're a kid, and you've got 2 whole days of not seeing this person, and you're just like cruising up the motorway in the car or something. Your mum's put on Whitney Houston, and you're gazing out the window wistfully, feeling nostalgic about your crush. But yeah, so that's it. That's the song.
I mean, it's obviously it was a global hit. I think it was number one in the UK for about 4 or 5 weeks. And
yeah,
and obviously it's the you know, a record that wasn't even necessarily a hit for Dolly Parton. And I think,
yeah,
I know she's come out many times and said, like, that record really helped pay off the mortgage. And I'm not sure when you got Whitney Houston. I mean, I guess at the time, being the age that I am, when Whitney Houston was releasing these sort of records, it was like, yeah, I'm not really into this sort of stuff. And I'd kind of sort of fan me tribe a little bit, and was sort of getting into other sorts of music. And it's only in hindsight that you listen back, and you sort of dig a little deeper. And I guess in the wake of her death, you watch documentaries and such. And her voice was fucking ridiculous. It was just different level, wasn't it? And
yeah, it was phenomenal.
And I think working with the producers she did to just kind of market it outside of the traditional R&B market, and she just took it global. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was, you know, to sort of have these sort of huge, because essentially they're power ballads, right?
Yeah.
You know, all of them tracks, like I Have Nothing and Run to You and all, you know, I'm trying to think what the other ones were, Greatest Love of All, the George Benson record, like Saving All, they're all essentially just power ballads. And I think it wasn't really until stuff like It's Not Right, But It's Okay. Is that what it's called? It's Okay, But It's Not All Right, that one. And stuff like that, that I think she, you know, you could really hear the influences on her career then and the stuff that she grew up in, you know, singing in the church and stuff. I think that really come through in the later points in her career. And then I guess just as she was getting into her stride there, things started to kind of get a little bit bleaker really, which was, you know, a real shame.
Yeah, but for sure.
Incredible voice.
Yeah. And I think like the whole kind of tragic end to Whitney Houston's journey kind of further enhances that heartbreaking element of the song now as well. But you're right, yeah, it's definitely a power ballad. And I think it probably started my love of power ballads and that kind of over-the-top vocal thing she does. But yeah, such a beautiful song. And I kind of went down a bit of a rabbit hole listening to all, there's loads of different live versions of it as well that I started listening to. My wife was like, why are you listening to I Will Always Love You? Why is this the 10th time you've listened? I was like, oh, no, they're different versions. I'm not going completely mad.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's loads of beautiful, there's loads of beautiful live versions of it. And I think obviously a lot of the time with those records, I guess, what was that? Probably like early 90s or something. Mm-hmm. They were one takes. There was a bit of editing going on. There was a bit of like vocal chopping and chopping things around and stuff like that. But a lot of those documentaries you watch, the producers are like, no, she just went in and sung that.
Yeah.
That was her just singing the song.
Yeah.
And now we do 50 takes of a song. Yeah. Choose the best bit of each line. And not always, but I think, you know, there was a magic to that kind of raw, organic, analog kind of way of recording music, and just to get it hits you. It's great.
Absolutely. Tell me about the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Right, so this one, it's not a song that came out while I was at school. It's actually a really old song, which was a part of my best mate's dad's record collection that we raided when we were probably about 13. And it's by a band called Wishbone Ash, who I think are from Newcastle.
You're right.
And it's a song called Jailbait, which is a questionable title, actually, thinking about now. But it's like, you know, at the time I was listening to a lot of blues. I was learning the guitar. And I've been playing guitar since I was really little. But my dad got me into a lot of blues stuff. And I think, I don't know if it's got something to do with like having parents who are musicians, and my dad's a guitar player, and he wanted to get me into all the things he loved. So I was on like Robert Johnson and Sunhouse and Leadbelly when I was 10. So kind of finding all of that like British and American influence, like obviously blues influenced the early incarnations of pop music. But then you started getting all the prog bands and things like that coming through. And Wishbone Ash were like, why it reminds me of school is because I would spend hours and hours every single day after school coming home, going up to my room and learning the guitar parts and playing along and probably looking in the mirror whilst I was doing it. But it was this song that had this like crazy dual lead guitar part in it. And me and my best mate had a band, and we knew this other guitar player who was like just one of those virtuoso kids from school who just can play anything. And we learned all of these Wishbone Ash songs together, and we would just set up our amps, turn them up as loud as they would go, and play these dual harmony solos together and stuff. And it was just so good. And it reminds me of that like excitement of being at school, finding the thing you love and just feeling desperate to do it and to get out of school and go home and learn these songs and try and, you know, and imagine that you're there. Imagining that you're that person and that you're on stage playing these songs. It was a lot of fun. So it kind of really, really takes me back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
To just being a teenager and wanting to be on stage.
I love that. I love the fact that everyone's at school listening to S Club 7 and that weird kid's learning Wishbone Ash songs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's quite funny because I did listen to very different music to everybody else. But I was kind of accepted for that. Do you know what I mean? It was like everyone knew that I played guitar and everyone was kind of interested. Everyone was listening to garage and drum and bass and stuff and smoking weed. And I was listening to the Kinks on my headphones and Wishbone Ash. And it was fun. It was good. It was a good time.
Did you enjoy school then?
No, I didn't. I think I got through school because of music. I found school really difficult. I have ADHD, and I think, you know, most people with any kind of neurodiversity or, you know, it was difficult for me. I couldn't really apply myself to it at all. Even with music lessons, I never took music lessons. I never took guitar lessons or anything, but music GCSE, I didn't do music GCSE because I just couldn't get my head around the theory of it all. And that's of course what you're graded on.
Yeah.
And I think even at like the young, I think you're very young when you're told to choose your subjects. And I think like, the thought of failing at the one thing I thought I was pretty good at was too much for me. So I just avoided that. But I would spend all my lunch times in the music rooms. I would spend all my after schools in the music rooms and going home and playing music. And I think, yeah, it's quite weird when you think about it. And school's basically just hanging out with your friends.
Yeah.
So looking back on it, I think I did have a really good time. But in the moment, it was difficult for me.
Whereabouts was school? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in a little town called Baldock, which is just about 30 miles north of London. So it's in Hertfordshire. So I went to school in Baldock. We moved around a little bit, just in the kind of surrounding towns and kind of different things. I went to college in a town called Hitchin, which is a great town. And they've got, really sadly, they've got...
It's going, isn't it?
Right now they've got... Club 85's going, yeah. So that was where we would be there every I think it was Wednesdays, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we would just be in there, jam nights, watching our friends' bands, or we'd be playing with our bands. And so many great musicians and people have come through that venue. But it's very sad to hear that it's going. Because that was a great place to grow up, and I think musically that was the hub.
Absolutely, it's a wonderful venue, and it's It's a real, real shame that
I still remember. I don't know if this guy is still the house engineer, but I just remember him telling me every single time I played, he was like, "Turn your amp down, turn your amp down." And he was like, "We haven't even started soundcheck yet, and you need to turn that amp down." I was just like, "Well, it's supposed to be loud. It's meant to be loud." But then, like, you know, you do the gig, and then you like sneak up on stage and turn it up again to where it was, and then you just like watch a video back and you're like, that does sound awful. You can only hear me. Typical.
Okay. Tell me the first song you ever buying from a record shop, please.
So this is quite cool actually, because my French grandma, she was pretty awesome. Sadly, she passed away last year, but this was a cool memory that I unearthed whilst I was thinking about these questions. But she, I think I was probably about 9 or something like that, or maybe 10. Maybe it was my 10th birthday. So I just started playing guitar, and my dad for my birthday got me like a tape deck so I could like record myself playing guitar. And my Mimi took me out it was like a tape cassette deck. And my Mimi took me out to David's Music in Letchworth, which is a town near where I grew up. And it was like, that was like an independent record store. I don't know if it's still there. It might be. And she bought me 2 Blur tape cassettes, and I'd not listened to Blur before. I don't really know why she bought those for me. I don't know if they were on offer or something. But one of them was Modern Life is Rubbish. And it had the song For Tomorrow on it, which was the first track on the album. And I just remember hearing it and just being like, wow, this guy sounds a bit like me, and kind of is singing these sort of songs that are kind of fun, but also emotionally vulnerable. And then that song's got that kind of like almost playgroundy la 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 la. And I think that probably played into it a little bit, but I just remember just listening to that record on repeat for weeks and weeks and weeks. And I've still got those cassettes somewhere. Yeah. I still think it's funny that she bought me those, because it's like, it wasn't children's music.
Yeah.
It wasn't kids' music. And they weren't like new records either. I reckon she must have gone in and they were on offer or something. And she was like, "I'm going to get you these 2 tapes." I can't imagine her having sat there listening to Blur.
Yeah.
Maybe she did. I don't know. Can't ask her now, sadly. But I like to imagine that she probably thought, "I'm going to get him into Blur."
Yeah.
But yeah, that was definitely the first like physical thing I had.
That's a great place to start.
Yeah. Yeah. And still remain to this day a massive Blur fan. I didn't get to go and watch them when they played their shows recently, but I just think that they're so brilliant. And obviously Damon Albarn is like, I saw an interview with him recently. It might have been part of that Zane Lowe thing, but it was basically saying, like people know him for Blur, but actually he's been in Gorillaz for longer than he was ever in Blur, and before they reformed, and sold way more records with them.
Oh, it's probably sold, God knows, many more with Gorillaz.
It's crazy, because I still completely associate him with Blur. But,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's so cool that he's had he's one of those kind of dream collaboration people that I would love to one day try something with him, or you know, be in a room with him.
Absolutely.
He's wicked.
I think at the moment where he's still just so prolific with what he records and such, I think we need to really cherish it, because you know, there was periods in Bowie's career, you know, through the sort of 90s and the late 80s, where he was kind of a bit forgotten, and people weren't really interested in what he was putting out, but people are always interested in what Damon Albarn's been putting out for the last 25 years, and he's still got that level of interest in what he's doing, and he's still pushing the boundaries of it, whether it be the Marley music, whether it be Gorillaz or Blur. You know, the recent Blur album, a massive progression from from the previous record.
I
think he is very Bowie-esque. I think he's just constantly reinventing himself in the sand.
And,
absolute legend. But all of that aside, Modern Life is Rubbish is still the greatest album he's ever made. I love that record.
Yeah, like, it's such a great record, isn't it? It's beautiful.
I was really lucky. I got to see him loads around then. That kind of dropped when I was like 19, and so we'd travel around and see. And that wasn't a huge commercial record, Modern Life. It wasn't until it was post Leisure, and it was obviously pre Park Life, and they kind of weren't a huge band then. So you get to see him in these like really sort of cool little venues, and just absolutely fantastic record, Modern Life. And I think it was with Leisure, I think they were just sort of tagging on the sort of baggy thing that was happening kind of post Roses and stuff like that, and hadn't really got their identity. And I remember seeing the first sort of press shot of Damon, like in his 501s with turn-ups and his cherry reds on and a Fred Perry, and it was like, whoa, they've got a look here. And it looks so different, like, from what any other band was doing. You know, at this point, everybody's looking over to Seattle. That was what was happening. Everybody was like, wow, what's this amazing music coming over from America? And then basically you had Modern Life, his rubbish era, Blur and Suede that were basically so fucking London. And, it was just such a contrast to what everything else that was going on. And like I say, it was when sort of Park Life dropped that it all obviously then sort of went stratospheric. But when you heard For Tomorrow and them kind of, you know, you mentioned sort of like the childlike melody with the la la la's at the end of that.
Yeah.
And even, you know, the something as spiky and as short as Advert, but it's still such a good pop song, and Chemical World and Sunday Sunday. And could you see the comparisons and the influence from, you know, you said earlier you was listening to the Kinks and stuff like that on your headphones. Could you hear that, oh, this is like that?
Yeah, because there's that kind of like you say, it's they were so like London-y and just the accent, and a lot of people were kind of singing in a lot of music that I heard when I was young and a kid was like very American.
Yeah.
Very Americanized and kind of and I think with when I first heard Blur, it was when I really heard somebody who sounded a bit more like me.
Yeah.
I definitely came through to like the Kinks after that, after I heard that. Mm. But yeah, definitely. I think it's you know, they're wearing their identity on their sleeves and they're not trying to hide who they are.
Yeah.
So I think that was super important actually in connecting with it as a kid.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tell me the song that's...
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Soundtrack your years clubbing.
Yeah, the clubbing thing. I mean, it probably doesn't surprise you. I And I've never been much of a clubber.
Yeah.
But I did have some amazing years when Kings of Leon were just the band. And it was like, my version of clubbing was like the Red Heart in Hitchin, which were, they did Club NME there and stuff like that. Yeah. And they had, there'd be bands playing, but then, you know, Kings of Leon, the Bucket was the song. And I think we were just all kind of in our late teens, or early teens, you know, pub, just getting into the pubs, yeah, and like trying to get served and hook up with people. And all the lads would be wearing like the skinniest spray on jeans, and our hair would be like hair sprayed out, and we'd all have like leather jackets on that we bought for like a tenner from Camden. And it was just like that song is that, he kind of like whoops at the beginning of it. Yeah. And it was just like everyone in the pub's just like, whoa. And I just, yeah, that really soundtracks like a specific summer to me. And it reminds me of like partying and just being out with my mates. And just like, I remember like people would be like piling out the pubs in Hitchin. There's like the pubs we used to go to, there was like two right opposite and one closed later than the other. And everyone was leaving one of them and just like walking down the street singing Kings of Leon. Yeah. And it was just like, it was so fun. It was such a fun time. Like completely reckless and lots of silly behavior, but it was, yeah, it was definitely like that song. Whenever it comes on now, I'm just like, ah, such good times.
And a good intro.
Definitely. Yeah. I guess it could have worked for question one. Yeah, no, it's great.
We're talking a lot about home. So I guess this works nicely to segue into track six, which is a favorite song from an artist from your home county, please.
So there's a singer called Bill Fay. And he's like a British singer-songwriter who was quite, he started to rise up in the 70s, early 70s, I think. And he had a song that was, that I definitely heard before. But when I started to connect all the dots, and I was just thinking, you know, I don't know where this guy's from. And like, I kind of heard this song. I think he might be American, but then I found out he wasn't. He was British. And he released an album a few years ago. I think he's like well into his late 70s. And it's just one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard. And he's very secretive. He's very private. And he doesn't really play shows, and he doesn't do like live performances, but he did one live performance on Jules Holland, and it was he had a few like rules, and one of them was like no one can be in the room apart from one camera person. So he did a performance with Jules Holland where it was just him and a piano in a room, and the song was called Never Ending Happening, and it's just one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard in my life. It really affected me, and I sent it around to a bunch of people that I know and songwriters and stuff, and they were like, I have not heard this song. Yeah. So it was just a real revelation, and also just like the songs themselves could only have been written by someone who's lived, who's like really, you know, got to that stage in life where they're, you know, in their late 70s or 70s, and just kind of like it's almost like it was almost like he had a message for younger people, and was just like, you don't take this for granted. This is like, you're part of a beautiful world. And you know, there's a line at the end of the song, the lyrics here, it's so I was looking at them earlier, the never-ending happening of what's to be and what has been, just to be a part of it is astonishing to me.
Yeah.
And it's just so beautiful. And I think the live version, the recorded version is beautiful, but the live version, the Jules Holland performance is so hypnotic. It's just one like quite long kind of eight bar piano loop, the whole the whole song is just this thing, but he's playing it with like his arms crossed over, and it's just, yeah, it's amazing. So yeah, it was cool finding out that he was kind of from around where I was. And, you know, my dad grew up in Watford and had heard of him, and it was cool.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Right. This is the last track. And this is where you get to play Tastemaker. And it's a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
Yeah, so this is one actually by my beautiful wife, Natalia Salter. And do you know what? One of the most amazing things about living with another songwriter is that I get to hear it all unfold and listen to these songs as they're kind of being made and created. And I think it was during the pandemic, we were just messing around and we were just stuck indoors and writing and bouncing ideas off each other. And then one day she was like, I've got this idea for a song. I don't know if it's any good. Can I play it to you? And she just played it live and on the guitar in our flat. And it's called A Million and One. And it's just such a beautiful song, well-written, beautiful lyrics, lovely hooks. And I was lucky enough to be in the studio and play a bit of guitar and help her record it. And I think, you know, I know so many wonderful, talented, incredible musicians. And I think the most important thing is great art and great expression. And I think ultimately that will always have its moment. So whenever I can, I always shout from the rooftops about her and what she's up to and what she's doing. And this song in particular, I think, is a beautiful example of what she does.
Fantastic. Well, we've spoken about so many people's music. It feels about right that we should actually talk about your music, right? And
fine.
And so what's happening? Tell us what's going to be happening this year.
So, yeah, I mean, we did I'd put an album out in February this year. And it was crazy because I'd had this huge long journey of between album one and album two. It was just a crazy journey of different things, but a lot of kind of struggle just trying to get through, like writing a second album, and not necessarily because I couldn't, but I think perhaps there was a few toxic relationships happening and different things were going on. And it ended up being an extremely long process. So when it came to putting that record out, it was almost like I was already on to the next thing. So I put an album out in February, but I'd also already finished the third kind of album as well. So what's been really lovely about this last year is feeling busy again and having released an album in February and then almost straight into a campaign for another album. So we've released a couple of songs already, just put one out on Friday called How I Love You. And so that's been really exciting. And I think the album's going to drop in sort of early next year. So we're doing you know, singles with like 6 weeks in between, 6 to 8 weeks in between, and just kind of like, yeah, just putting new music out. So it feels really good. It just feels amazing to be reconnecting with people again. I did a headline tour earlier on in the year around Europe. I just came off the road. I was doing some touring with Christine and the Queens.
Fantastic.
Which was amazing.
What's that like to get to watch that show every night?
So inspiring. I mean, not only is it like nothing I've ever seen before, in terms of like a gig. It's not really a gig. It's a theatre performance.
Yeah,
it's like you're watching a play in some moments. And I really feel like Red is, you know, a true visionary, for what he's doing. And I think, you know, being on the road, it was weird because I was just playing, I just rocked up with my Telecaster and kind of did the whole thing. I was like, right, I don't want to go with a band. I don't really want to do anything like too over the top. I think like when you're a support act, you just got to get on there and keep it short and sweet and just make it as unintrusive as possible. But it worked. It really worked. So it was just, yeah, the crowds were really kind of appreciative of the music and weren't necessarily there just to sort of get on it and party. It wasn't that kind of thing. So that was really good. So yeah, I've just been reconnecting with the audience and getting out there, putting new music out, getting back out on the road. It's all very, very exciting. Done a few collaborations. I just had a collaboration come out with Camel Fat, who are a brilliant, yeah. Kind of, I guess, like EDM kind of duo. And they're, you know, Grammy nominated. And whenever I get to work with people like that, it's kind of like, you know, it's sometimes you can feel a little out of your depth and a little bit like, you know, sure, should I really be here? But then you gotta just seize those moments, because what they do is so beautiful, and it's analog, and it's kind of, their new album's brilliant, and I'm very honored to be a part of that. I wrote a couple of songs on that as well as the one I featured on, so I'm doing quite a bit of writing just with other people. So yeah, busy, very busy.
Fantastic. Well, what we'll do is we always put together a Spotify playlist that includes every track that we've spoken about today. And obviously we'll put your music on there and put the collab with Camel Fat on there as well. So people can go and listen to everything that we've spoken about today. And if those people want to keep up to speed with all things Rhodes, where's the best place to do that?
Best place to keep up with me is probably Instagram. That's kind of my main hub for information.
Okay. Well, if it's cool with you. Sorry, go on. Sorry.
I think it's at Rhodes Music. I think that's just it. So Instagram is the handle is at Rhodes Music.
Wonderful. Well, if it is cool with you, then we'll tag you on this when this episode comes out. So if people aren't following you already, then they can do so, nice and simple.
Yeah, awesome.
Fantastic.
Wonderful stuff.
Rhodes, it's been an absolute delight talking records with you, mate. Thank you so much.
Yeah, same, man. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And it was, it was a lovely chat. Thank
Absolute
you.
Absolute pleasure. I'm going to press stop, but don't go anywhere. There you go, Rhodes. What an absolutely delightful chat that was. As mentioned at the beginning, now you've finished this chat, go and explore the back catalogue, because there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of episodes all to be enjoyed totally for free. And if you explored all of that and you still want more, then why not go and have a look at the Patreon, because there's hundreds of radio shows available over there and unreleased episodes. There's also you get to watch all the episodes over there, because I upload the videos of these conversations as well, and you also get to come to the monthly live chat, which we do on Zoom, and we do a little live episode, and you can come along and you can get involved and feature on Off the Beaten Track, and it's a really lovely thing we do once a month. So be great to have you over there. But thanks also, you know, so much for listening today. Please, if you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, drop us a little message, let us know what you think of Off the Beaten Track. Anybody that you think would be a good guest, why not let me know? I'm available on all the socials, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So come give us a follow, give us a share, a love, a retweet, you know all the stuff. And in the meantime, be nice to each other, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.